This is Stephen Adams.
And this is Kevin Durant. Oh, sorry.
Kevin Durant. You Kevin Durant, mate? Good to see you, mate. Different complexion.
Okay, let's go. Again.
So, this is Stephen Adams.
And this is Enes Kanter.
You're listening to the Down to Earth...
Down to Dunk podcast.
What? Down to Dunk.
Down to Dunk.
I'll say that.
Introduce yourself, mate.
Here's Stephen Adams, and I'm Enes Kanter.
And you're listening to Down to Dunk podcast.
Stay tuned.
Welcome to the Down to Dunk podcast. This is your host, Andrew Schleck. I just want to mention that we're a part of DailyThunder.com and also the AlmightyBaller.com. And today we have special guest, Zach Harper. Zach, how's it going?
I'm excellent. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm good. Let's get right into it. Let's talk about Russell Westbrook's MVP chances. So the Thunder played the Rockets yesterday and got completely demolished, even though the Thunder somehow made it kind of a game at the end. But I think clearly the Rockets are better than the Thunder. I don't think that anyone would dispute that. But I don't think there was a lot to be taken from the MVP race from that particular game. But what do you take, where do you think that Russ is as far as the MVP race, according to you?
I mean, I think he's definitely not first at this point. I mean, I think he's had a spectacular season, but James Harden has separated himself a little bit from the pack. And then for me, it's whether or not I would put Kawhi Leonard over Russ at this point, because I think Kawhi is being kind of just dismissed because it's the Spurs and because they do well when he's not on the court, which is this weird way of looking at value that I'm not quite sure how we take it yet. Like, sometimes it matters to us and sometimes it doesn't matter to us, and I'm not quite sure what to do with that. But I think, you know, being second or third in this race, I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. It just seems like Harden is kind of excelling his team a little bit, and Russ is not that he's doing a bad job of anything at this point, but there's just something missing, and he could, you know, honestly, part of it is he could use more help, which maybe fits into the value narrative for Russ a little bit better. But for me, Harden's got it right now.
Yeah, and I can't argue with that. And I wouldn't expect any other result at this point. I think to think that wins aren't going to matter in this MVP race is maybe a little naive, because it's always mattered all the way back to, you know, Steve Nash. You know, Steve Nash didn't put up gaudy numbers, but his team was winning, and he was the key reason for it. And James Harden is that plus the gaudy numbers. What would it take for Russell Westbrook to win the MVP for you?
I mean, it seems weird to kind of put it on one final stretch of the season, but there is this very real thing of, like, guys who don't win 50 games don't generally win MVP, right? So if the Thunder could, if the Thunder closed the season on a, what would it have to be, a 9-1 run? I can't remember how many games they have left. I think they have 10 games left.
10 games, yeah.
Yeah, they're what, 41-31?
Yes.
So if they finish it on a 9-1 run, would that be enough to push them, you know, to push him into the top of that? Maybe. I mean, I think the Rockets would have to falter a little bit, even though they're not going to lose any of their playoff position. They're locked in at three. But I don't know if Harden kind of declined a little bit over the last 10 games and Russ pushed them, and maybe that even puts them closer into the 4-5 race than they are. I mean, I kind of, even though it's close right now, I kind of feel like the Jazz and the Clippers have that 4-5 wrapped up. Mm-hmm. But if he could manage to get them into that, play spectacular basketball like he has been, and they, you know, reach 50 wins, it seems like such an arbitrary number, but that number historically matters.
Yeah. This is the season of arbitrary numbers, I think.
Right. Right. Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, they're just not going to win. They're just not going to go 9-1. I mean, you look at their schedule and you can see the path, because, like, the best team they play is San Antonio, and who knows if they're going to play all their guys that night. And then they've got, like, the Charlottes and Denver and Minnesota and Phoenix and Orlando. I mean, like, they don't have a tough schedule, but they tend to lose to teams like Dallas and Phoenix and Orlando. So, I would be surprised if he won it. It's been a spectacular season for him, and for him to do what he's done is ridiculous. What do you think? So I think there's, like, two camps that just think, like, the triple double is amazing and let's just enjoy it. And there's some that say, like, well, let's maybe take a deeper look at this. Maybe this isn't as impressive as, you know, a lot of people think. Where do you lie on the triple doubles?
I mean, they're cool, right? Like it's a thing that we've tracked, and it's a thing that we've been like, hey, this guy got a triple double tonight. We don't do a lot of, hey, this guy got, you know, almost a triple double tonight. Yeah. Like we don't really track almost triple doubles. We track triple doubles for a reason, because it's a, you know, I guess it's an attack on round numbers now, right? Like we no longer like round numbers. I mean, Dirk was one of six players with 29,998 points until he reached a 30,000 point club, which also has six members, right? Like it doesn't, like round numbers are kind of stupid, but they're still an easier way to, an easier, like sexier thing to track for us. I think the funny part to me about it is the difference between the Houston camp and the OKC camp of like, when like at the start of the season, it was like, hey, James Harden's a triple double machine. Look, he had a 50-point triple double. How ridiculous is that? And then, and so like we used it as a superlative for Harden. And now it's like, and now, now that we have Harden versus Russ, and there is such a gap between the triple doubles, even though Harden has a stupid amount of triple doubles this season, we look at it as like, well, I mean, it's impressive, but it's not that impressive. It is just a round number, which I find like that's just dumb to me. Like we can't praise it in the start of the season. And then one guy who we don't think deserves MVP as much as the other guy has a higher number of them. And now all of a sudden they don't matter. So I don't like, to me, Russ, you know, Russ averages a triple double. He doesn't win MVP. All right. Then he's the modern day Oscar Robertson in that sense of like, Oscar didn't win didn't win MVP the year he averaged a triple double. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, Bill Russell beat him, beat Wilt. And it was fine. Like I, you know, some people retroactively want to reevaluate the season. I didn't watch a whole lot of 1961-62, like just not something I was tuned into, mostly because I wasn't alive for 20 years. But you know, it still becomes kind of a crazy thing to think about of like, that's almost a badge of honor. Like 10 years from now, 20 years from now, 30 years from now, we're going to look back and be like, wow, Russ averaged a triple double that year and didn't win MVP. That's how crazy that season was.
Something else that is super crazy is this March Madness box from Chicken Express. I'm going to tell you about it again because it's so good. You can only get it for one more week at Chicken Express. Two tenders, one fish, one side, a drink, a biscuit or roll, and two hush puppies for $6.99. It's a ridiculous deal. You've got to go. March is almost over. Go get yourself a March Madness box this week. There will be a new special next week for any family meal that you buy. You'll get a gallon of sweet tea, which is the best sweet tea that you could buy. Please check out Chicken Express, locations all around Oklahoma City and Texas and the surrounding states. Go check out Chicken Express today.
I'm just super frustrated with the downplaying of it. Like, why can't, I mean, he doesn't have to win the MVP for it to be great or this to be like an amazing season. And I don't really care what rebounds it is. Like, I don't care, like, if he's getting the assist at home or on the road or whatever it is. Like, this is an amazing accomplishment. It's only been done one other time in the NBA, and there's been a lot of really good players and a lot of really good systems. And I'm just tired of like the trying to downplay it and trying to make it seem like it's commonplace, because it's just not. No one, if this was something that could be done, it would have been done. I don't
know. Right. No, I'm with you. I like it. I mean, I do get the internet law of only one thing can be impressive at a time. So that like that I get. And we are impressed by James Harden at the moment. So Russ is no longer impressive to us.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I mean, when Oscar did it, they played like what, like 20 extra possessions a game, mm-hmm. some ridiculous like so he's actually far surpassed what Oscar Robertson did when he did it in terms of just sheer efficiency and production. But yeah, like all right, so yeah, they're giving him rebounds on missed free throws, right? Like the team is actively giving him that.
Okay.
Is this the first time in NBA history this has been done? Right. Maybe that's just dumb of everyone not to do that before. Like LeBron probably would have averaged a triple double five times by now if someone had thought in Cleveland, like, oh, you know what, LeBron, just go get that.
Just go
get the missed free throw. Like, I don't know. I don't know that it's innovative, but I also don't know that it's something that should completely ruin it, because we can't glow about when Oscar Robertson did it and then be mad at Russ for doing it on 20 fewer possessions a game but grabbing missed free throws.
Yeah, and the thing is that the Thunder have designed this team for him to average a triple-double, because the only way the Thunder offense is any good at all is if they're playing fast. And they're not going to be fast if Steven Adams is grabbing the rebound or if Enes Kanter is grabbing the rebound. Those guys block out for him to grab the rebound. And it's just like it's just some interesting circumstances for him to be able to do it. And a part of it's Kevin Durant left, and they have really nobody else that can really facilitate an offense. And it's just all just kind of the perfect storm for this triple-double. And it is amazing. And it is, and there's ways to break it down to say, like, this is why it's happening, and it's still amazing, instead of this is why it's happening, and it's not that cool. Anyways.
Yeah, okay, so and if he wasn't grabbing these free throw misses, right? All right, then he'd be averaging 8.5, 9 rebounds a game. Like, that's still stupid, right? That's, yes. That's still a ridiculous number for a point guard to average. So what are we even doing here?
Yeah, that's ridiculous. Let's talk about the supporting cast. So, again, there's, like, this narrative that, like, Russ has nobody around him. And then there's people that are like, wait a minute. Like, Steven Adams is pretty good. Victor Oladipo is pretty good. What do you think about his supporting cast and maybe what it looks like going forward?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's a lot of talent on this team. I just think it's mostly defensive talent, right? And we don't really know how to judge defense. Like, you can see that, like, people throwing around defensive RPM, which doesn't actually mean anything. Like, I mean, it's a stat that is 75% accurate and 25% a guess.
Yeah,
and so that's good enough for some people. That is kind of laughed at by certain analytically inclined executives around the NBA. Like, it's just a stat. Like, it's kind of like PER. Like, PER, you know, kind of gives us a viewpoint of what's happening, but it ultimately doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
And that's the problem, is we don't have a stat. Like, we can look at, like, oh, the field goal percentage against this guy. Yeah, but that's not always, you know, measured in a great way, right? Mm-hmm. We can look at, like, defensive net rating on and off the court. Yeah, but there's a lot of noise in that too. So we don't really know how to judge defense, and we think we know what defense is, but then you talk to an NBA scout and you're like, wow, I really don't know what the hell I'm talking about. So you go into this, like, not really knowing how to judge defense. We just think we know it when we see it. Well, there's a ton of, like, Andre Roberson is a ridiculous defender. Mm-hmm. Victor Oladipo is a very solid defender. Adams is a good defender. Now they have Taj Gibson, who's still a very good defender. You know, they have a lot of defensive talent on this team. It's just, it's harder to judge how that fits together. Offensively, Russ uses so much of their, you know, their offense and their usage and their just opportunities. And he probably averages so many assists because that's the only way for other guys to score, right? It's like, yeah, not a lot of guys can create their own shot. And there's just not shooting on this team. I mean, I think that's the toughest part for looking at how much talent is on the offensive end next to Russ, is that, you know, Enes Kanter can obviously score. I think Steven Adams is fantastic in the pick and roll. Oladipo has been much improved this year in my mind. But there's still just not a lot of floor stretching. Alex Abrines isn't really, you know, out there and effective. Doug McDermott can't do anything but spot up shoot. You know, if a guy doesn't leave him, there's not a lot he can do. So, you know, I think moving forward, they need more shooting, and I think they can develop more shooting, but you are going to have those instances where it's Russ playing against a very constricted offensive construct. And until they kind of figure out how to stretch that out a little bit, there's just going to be flaws there, and it's going to look like he has less help.
Yeah. And Victor Oladipo is really, if this roster stays the same or is close to the same at the start of next season, Victor Oladipo is, like, the only way kind of out of that. Cause I watched him, like, man, like, he can handle the ball, and he could probably run a pick and roll, but he really never does it on the Thunder. He's basically like they treat him like Kent Bazemore a lot of times, where he's a spot up shooter, yeah, defender. And I just don't really get that. I don't understand why the Thunder play they maybe have the two worst backup point guards in the NBA right now, and Samaj Christian and Norris Cole. Like, why do you have to play them? Like, why can't you just stagger Russ and Vic and just have Victor Oladipo run pick and rolls?
Orlando played him at the point early on in his career to kind of try to develop those skills and that understanding of just that playmaking aspect of the position. And he didn't do great there, but I think he's definitely better than Samaj and Norris, right? Like, I think you could almost use him in a Bradley Beal way of, like, like running side pick and rolls and making the defense collapse on him and then allowing him to make a good decision. Sometimes it's not going to work out, but I think it would work a lot more than they allow it to.
Yeah, and I think the one other aspect of his game that he needs to develop is getting to the free throw line. That's kind of like the difference between like he and like a fringe all-star, because he's got all the skills that those guys do, but he just doesn't do the things that they do. He doesn't get to the free throw line, and he doesn't really run much pick and roll. And I feel like he could do both of those, but I just haven't seen it. Do you think he can develop those?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's like 23, 24 years old. Like, I don't think we've seen all we can see out of him, because going from Orlando to playing next to Russ, like, you've seen a gigantic leap in his outside shooting ability. Mm-hmm. That kind of was more in line with what he did at Indiana. But yeah, like, I mean, there's no, I'm looking at his assist percentage right now is 11.8%, which is not high at all. Like, there's no reason it should be in the 20s.
Yeah.
And that happens from giving him more usage in pick and rolls, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And just what's his, do you see his free throw rate right now? Because it's like embarrassingly 16. Low. Yeah.
Yeah. 16 is like, I mean, that should be, I mean, even if it was doubled, you'd be like, he should get to the free throw line more.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's embarrassing. And he avoids contact when he drives. And I feel like with some guys, that's just who they are and that's how they play. I don't know. I would like to probably look into some guys that have had that low of a free throw rate and see if it does improve, because it's concerningly low.
Yeah, I mean, it is. And I think you're right. Like, some guys just do kind of think, I need to get this shot off, right? And so they avoid the contact instead of kind of absorbing it. And I don't know that it's like, oh, this guy's soft, or this guy doesn't want to go to the free throw line or whatever, because he's not a great free throw shooter. I mean, especially for a guard position, he's like, what, 75%? So I don't think it's that mentality. I think it's more of, I'm trying to get around this defender to get a layup.
Yeah.
And that can, you know, not to compare him to Derrick Rose in any way, but that was Derrick Rose's leap from really good young player to MVP. Well, part of that was the media just didn't want to give to LeBron, but the other part of that was that he started taking that contact. He started, like, he saw a huge leap in his free throw rate and getting to the line, and I think Oladipo has that in him, especially with, like, we know he's athletic, right?
Yeah.
Like, he can probably, he can probably get into those defenders and still absorb the contact and maybe finish for and ones. He has to have that click in his head.
Yeah, and he's got a really nice model in front of him, Russell Westbrook, who gets to the line all the time, just using his athleticism. So
maybe he sees it. Maybe he watches Westbrook. He's like, that's exhausting.
Yeah,
I'll go somewhere else.
I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, maybe it's a bad influence by Westbrook, because he's just like, man, he takes a lot of punishment. I don't want any part of that.
That's right. What are your Andre Robertson has been. He's just a conundrum, because he is just a fantastic defender. I mean, he's probably one of the best four or five perimeter defenders in the league right now. But he's also probably the worst offensive guard forward in the league right now. I mean, he bricks free throws and airballs free throws at an embarrassing rate. I don't know what to think about his contract coming up. I don't really know what number to pin down, because I've heard maybe like 12 million to 15 million. I'm like, oh man, like, I like him, but I don't know. What are your thoughts on him as a player? And then I'd like to hear your thoughts on his potential contract.
Yeah. I mean, 15 is, that seems excessive, right? Yeah. Like, yes. He kind of reminds me a little bit, I don't know if playing style is the same, but Jay Crowder before he re-signed with Boston, right? Like, a guy who couldn't shoot. I mean, he could shoot more than what Andre does right now, but really couldn't shoot. He was just a defender, a guy who could move out the ball. Like, you look at Andre and the way he cuts the basket. He knows when to cut. He's really smart off the ball. He just doesn't have that ability to go the other way, where you kind of set up a backdoor cut and then you flare out to the corner and that's a good spot for him, right? Like, that's just not a part of his game. And I don't know. I mean, I just don't know that he's ever going to be a shooter. Like, you can, like, you know, as someone who has closely followed Ricky Rubio's career, you know, everyone always looks at two guys as like, hey, well, these guys learned how to shoot. It's always Jason Kidd learned how to shoot and Kawhi Leonard learned how to shoot, right? So why can't other guys? These guys are a little bit more skilled than any other player in NBA history, right? Like I don't know that these should be the same. Like, when looking at Ricky Rubio, you're like, hey, well, Jason Kidd learned how to shoot. It's like, yeah, well, Jason Kidd was an all-NBA Hall of Fame player. So like him learning to shoot is a little different than Ricky Rubio, who I think is really good learning how to shoot. And the same with like Roberson to Kawhi. Like, yeah, Kawhi learned how to shoot pretty quickly right out of college and has become a guy who can shoot in almost any situation. Roberson, I never know how to say his name. I'll just say
Roberson.
Roberson, you know, kind of fits that profile physically, but doesn't have any of the other skills to really do that. So he, like, at this point, he probably is what he is, even though he's only 25, 26 years old. At the same time, it doesn't mean he can't be effective. You just can't have a guy who's 25% from three and less than 50% from the free throw line. One of those has to change. He either has to become Bruce Bowen, who could hit threes and couldn't hit free throws, or he has to become a guy who can hit free throws and you just say, all right, well, even if he can't hit a three, he can get to the free throw line and not be a disaster. So in turn, you know, his offensive game, I just don't know how much it can change moving forward. And if that's, and if it doesn't change all that much, you know, can you get him in that Jay Crowder range? Like Jay Crowder signed for what? $7 million a year. It was like 5 years, $35 million. Mm-hmm. All right. Add a little bit of inflation in the 2 years that since he's signed that deal, and you're probably getting into like the 9, 10, 11 range. You know, that seems fine to me. Like if that's what it's going to cost to keep him, that seems fine. When you start creeping into that Evan Turner money or that Chris Middleton money for a guy who just can't shoot and can't make free throws, that's when I think you say like, all right, well, we've enjoyed having you here, but yeah, you can't, I mean, you just can't eat up that much of the cap. Especially when you still maybe have to add another impact player, either by acquiring them and re-signing or by just straight up having enough cap flexibility to make it happen.
Lincoln Lending understands that not all lenders are created equal. With the most competitive interest rates and highly trained professionals available, Lincoln Lending will communicate and accommodate your every need throughout the home buying process. Getting approved has never been easier with Lincoln Lending's new mobile app and website. Download the Lincoln Lending app at the App Store and the Google Play Store. You can also visit the website www.lincolnok.com or call 799-LEND to apply today. Lincoln Lending, not all lenders are created equal. NMLS 398026.
Yeah, I think we're on the same page. I just don't think the Thunder can be a tax team and, you know, have Andre Roberson be the guy that makes you that. I just don't think that makes any sense for like the ownership.
Right, and maybe they have enough depth to move Cantor, right? Like Cantor's been a pretty valuable guy for them this year, but maybe if you're going to pay Roberson that kind of money, then maybe you have to offload Cantor. But then at that point, you still have Sabonis and you still have maybe Taj Gibson, depending on how that re-sign goes. And you still have guys that you can fit into that four slot, but man, if you lose Cantor just to keep Roberson, that seemed like a net negative to me.
Yeah. So we talked about this on our podcast on Friday. Would you rather keep Cantor and then only be able to keep one of Roberson and Gibson, or trade Cantor for like a draft pick or a future draft pick and then keep Taj and Roberson?
I mean, I think I would rather have Gibson, Roberson, and a pick just because I trust the Thunder to draft well and develop well.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, that is, you are losing a pretty big part of that second unit, and this team already struggles enough to score. If you're not able to secure some kind of offense immediately in place of Cantor, you could see a real, maybe that just turns into like some kind of 2012 Memphis Grizzlies grit and grind, you know, bench unit. But that, I mean, that could get ugly real fast with the drop off in offensive talent for when, you know, Russ sits or even play alongside Russ.
Yeah. Cantor's another guy. Like, I really like him and I really like his game. And the fact that they have wrapped up all this money and now him and Steven Adams, and they can play together against certain teams, but they can't play together every night. It just makes it really tough. I think if Cantor could maybe shoot threes, then I think that would maybe make it a little bit more doable. But they're never going to be able to play together more than like 10 minutes a night. I think at some point you're going to have to move on from him, right? I don't know. I mean, what do you think?
I mean, just because it is, you know, that's going to be what, like 18 to 20% of their cap?
Yeah.
You know, assuming that it gets to like, you know, $102 million as it's projected next year and doesn't rise all that much more after that, you know, you're looking at, yeah, about 18 to, I mean, maybe on the best case scenario, 15% of the cap. That's a lot, you know, that's a lot when you have to pay Oladipo and pay Adams and pay Westbrook and pay, you know, Robertson. And like, there's only so many guys you can pay those eight figure salaries to if you're going to avoid the tax. So, I mean, I think he's worth it now, but in the future to maximize talent around Russ, it probably doesn't end up working out, but also it might be a very movable contract because another team could use a player like that.
Yeah. What? So this has been another tough thing for like Thunder fans when we're like working in the trade machine, like Vucevic and Valanciunas and all these centers that don't have like, they you can't really finish games with a lot of these guys and they don't fit the quote unquote modern NBA. What are your thoughts on like potential fits for Kanter moving forward? Like if they were to trade him for a draft pick or trade him for a player and a pick, are there any landing spots that make sense to you?
I mean, I don't really know what the Indiana Pacers are doing in terms of roster construction. So like it makes sense to me that he could fit there as a guy off the bench. Also because I think, you know, I think Miles Turner could cover for him if you're staggering those minutes, could cover for him defensively. So I think like maybe a team like that, like it feels like one of those middle teams, probably especially in the East, of like they don't really know, like, you know, Milwaukee has Greg Monroe. How much better is Greg Monroe than someone like Enes Kanter, you know, if they want to keep that kind of a role player moving forward? You know, I think teams like that, you know, that big man that you don't really know what to do with. I mean, I think you can add Gorgui Dieng to that mix in mm-hmm. in Minnesota. Like it does seem like the trend around the NBA is we're just going to re-sign this guy and then we'll figure it out later. So I think that as long as there are teams still willing to do that for that like $15 to $18 million a year range, I think you can find landing spots, you know, probably 10 to 15 teams around the NBA. It makes you wonder, like the elite teams that are truly moving towards a championship, how many of those teams end up with that guy? And if it's not, and if the answer is not a lot, how long does it take everyone else to kind of catch on to that, yeah, this guy's talented, but we don't really want him.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's tough because I feel like the Thunder have kind of gone all in on that and all in on the offensive rebounding. But then you watch it against the Rockets and you watch it against the Warriors and you're like, oh, like this doesn't work. Like it just
right, flat yeah. out
is not I mean, working.
Like you really have to be committed to, we slow the pace, we make it ugly, we have some shooting to make up for it on the other end of the floor, and we will just bully you mm-hmm. inside. And I don't know that you can truly adopt that style because of the defensive questions that Kanter brings by having him on the roster.
Yeah. And for the Thunder, it's tough. This is not the team that they want. This is not the team they designed. But they,
yeah, I mean, it's almost like they lost somebody on the fly, right? And yeah. they kind of had to scramble around that, which I think they've done a pretty good job of doing. Like not a lot of teams could be this successful losing a guy like Kevin Durant, but there is a certain point where the scrambling and the, you know, the contingency plan has to become something that moving forward makes a ton of sense.
Yes. And if their half court offense was like even passable, I think that this style would make a lot more sense. But they just really can't score in the half court. And when they do, it's inefficient shots and it's a lot of times a luck plays into it. Like they have to play fast, but then they want, I don't know, what they want and what's happening is it's just a big jumbled mess right now. And it's just amplified when you play these like elite teams that shoot a ton of threes. You can just kind of tell how far behind the Thunder are right now. I want you to rank these players as far as the player they'll be in the future.
Okay.
Alex Abrines, Domantas Sabonis, Doug McDermott, and Jeremy Grant.
I would go Sabonis, Abrines, McDermott, Grant.
Okay.
I'm very high on Sabonis. I mean, I loved him at Gonzaga. Like I think that he can turn into a starting caliber big man in the NBA. Probably takes a couple of years, but I really think like he just has a good solid skill set and will not try to play outside of his role too much. Abrines, I think you can see him getting more comfortable with the NBA game, and as long as he can you know, kind of utilize that athleticism and be a shot maker from outside, I think he'll fit in great. McDermott probably is what he is at this point, which is a fine, you know, player off the bench. Grant, I love Jeremy Grant. I mean, he's a guy that, you know, this doesn't mean anything, but in NBA 2K, I always end up with him on my team, right? Like, cause you just love the idea of Jeremy Grant, like yeah. This crazy athletic, long guy who just makes plays at the rim. And you want guys like that, but there is a certain level of, if he can't be a great defender and he can't be a guy who makes a jumper, that just lowers the ceiling on him so much.
Yeah. And he's like still 22 somehow. It feels like he's been in the league forever, but
he's been 22 years old for 6 years.
Yeah.
Like exactly. This is, I mean, there's no way he's actually 22.
he's shot the ball well too. But for the Thunder, he's really fallen out of the rotation. And I think that's where you have to say, oh, like they don't have a ton of great forwards. And so to look at him and for him to not play, you're like, okay, something's going on here that we're not seeing. Cause when he comes in the game, like yesterday, he had that like amazing block at the rim. And I think he was like a +9 in a game the Thunder just got killed in. So he has his moments and he has flashes, and the Thunder can make him a restricted free agent this summer. So I'm very interested to watch that and see what happens there, to see if they maybe, try to get him on a lower contract and see if they can develop him. McDermott's interesting too. Like I think that he's a good offensive player. Yesterday he was as lost as could be in the 4 minutes that he played defense. And I don't know, like, I think he's got, we've been talking about this too, like Abrines versus McDermott. And I think Abrines is just a lot smarter on defense, but he just doesn't have the body. And I'm starting to think that McDermott's like the opposite way, that he has like more of the NBA body, but, is not figuring things out. Do you think he could ever develop into being a starter? Do you think that he's got like the IQ to be that kind of player?
I just don't think he brings enough to the table. Like I think maybe on a defensive minded team that needs shooting to start up games, then yeah, maybe in those situations he could become a starter. But I think he's best served as, you know, a sixth or seventh man off the bench, because you know, for the Thunder, it probably makes more sense for them to have more of a playmaker at that, you know, that backup three, mm-hmm. than what McDermott's able to do. But they are so starved for shooting that he does kind of become a necessity for them on a lot of nights. I look at like him versus Abrines. I kind of look at Abrines as like he could be a JJ Redick type of defender, mm-hmm. where it's like not a guy you expect to shut anybody down, but just a really solid help defender who doesn't get that lost.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes just being able to get in the way is enough. Yes. You don't have to make plays. You're just in the way and you're in proper position and that's enough. I don't know that I ever see McDermott being a guy who can consistently do that.
Yeah. Yeah, Abrines he's super smart. He knows how to play the game, and he can really shoot it. Talk about Sabonis a little bit, because yesterday and really for a while, Sabonis hasn't played well, and I'm still like trying to like back him up. Like, guys, like seriously, he's got this skill set. I think he's really good, but a lot of people are saying, well, I don't really even think he's any good at all. I'm like, he's 20 years old. But tell me, like, what have you seen from him? What are the skills that you see that make you think that he can be a starter?
I think he's a better passer than he's been allowed to be. And maybe that is just his last name clouding my expectation of what he's supposed to be. But I do think, like, I think he has that skill. I think he can pass out of the post. I think he can pass out of pick and roll situations. I think a big problem for the Thunder is they have that pick and roll down in terms of, you know, the initiator into the right. But having that next, like, I look at Sabonis, I look at Steven Adams, I think, and part of this is probably just them not having a lot of shooting around them, but I think that they can make great decisions as the guy rolling to the basket, receiving the ball and having a decision to make between going into the contact or kicking it out to a corner shooter. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, I think they both have that ability. I just don't think they're allowed to show it all that much. So I think Sabonis can execute that well. I think he's going to be a monster on the boards most of his career. I don't think he'll end up turning the ball over all that much as a player. And that's, you know, that's just huge for a guy trying to create points inside. And I think he can shoot. Like, I know he hasn't shot the three well, but he's a good mid-range shooter. And I think you should be able to, I mean, maybe it ends up being a Donatas Motiejunas situation where we keep thinking like, hey, this guy could be a stretch four, and then he never shoots well, from the outside. I think with Sabonis, he'll at least be a guy who can hit corner threes and he can become a pick and pop threat.
Yeah. He's in a part of it. Like yesterday, he's playing with Samaj Christian and Andre Robertson at the same time on the offensive end.
Yeah, that sucks, right? Like that's just not a lot of offense to play around.
Like I just don't get it. And to expect like this big guy who's 20 years old, who's still figuring himself out, to like basically play like 3-on-1, like it's not a great situation for him right now.
No, it's not. And he'll be a better rim protector. I think that'll come with more experience. He'll be a better help defender as he gets more experience. I think majority of his career, at worst, he's a solid big man in the rotation.
Yeah. The Thunder have in the 20s, like low 20s pick, and the Thunder need a backup point guard so bad. And I know that there's some backup point guards that can maybe get via free agency or something like that, but there's a few guys that I think could play that spot. Juwan Evans in particular. He played at OSU. I think that he's a really smart basketball player. I think he could plug in next year. What do you think about Juwan Evans and him as an NBA player?
I like him. I think it kind of depends on how tall is he actually? Is he actually north of 6 foot, or is he barely 6 feet? And if so, what can he do with his wingspan? His wingspan looks decent, but I don't know. He's not Shane Larkin out there who is T-Rex arms, but I don't know that he has these incredibly long limbs either. So, his measurements will probably determine just how high he goes in the draft. And then, outside of that, like his game, he seems like he's a good pick and roll scorer. He's probably a better passer than he's been allowed to be at OSU. I guess the thing that concerns me is can he do anything at the end of a shot clock when, a possession kind of breaks down, and can he be a guy who just creates a ton of points in transition? That ends up being the key for a lot of backup point guards. It's like, can you take advantage of those situations? As much as everyone hates JJ Barea, he's been great at those kind of situations throughout his career. And that can be the difference between, a bench unit that doesn't really score all that much and a bench unit that keeps everyone afloat.
Yeah. I think that he can. I've watched him all season. I graduated from Oklahoma State, so I'm a super homer for him. But I think that he can come in and play. I think he's better than Samaj Christian right now, at least offensively, which isn't really saying much.
Right.
Okay, so for the Thunder, would you rather have Donovan Mitchell or Luke Kennard?
Oh, I want to believe in Luke Kennard. Because I do like watching. I just wonder how much of his game is because he's going against crappy college players.
Yeah.
And I mean, just, I'm not trying to be the guy who's like, hey, college basketball sucks, but college basketball kind of sucks. I don't know how much that really translates to the NBA. Whereas with Mitchell, I'd probably like him better if he was like 6'5". Yeah. His height worries me a little bit, but could he be 80% of what Eric Gordon is? I think so. Like, I think that's probably a ceiling, but that's a really good role player. He seems like just a dynamite spot up shooter, and that may be that plus, being a guy who can play within the pick and roll as like a side pick and roll guy, like that just seems like a player I want a little bit more than hoping Luke Kennard isn't just a college guy.
Yeah. Do you think that Mitchell could play backup point guard? Cause he's the size of like a backup point guard.
Yeah. I mean, I think that maybe he's, maybe that combo guard off the bench where he can play net. He can show some spot minutes at point guard, for like 4 minutes a game, or he can play alongside a point guard. I think he'll have that versatility at the next level.
Yeah. I'm trying to see, what do you think about Harry Giles? I don't know that anyone, I've never heard like a great opinion on him. What do you think about him?
The physical aspects are great, right? I mean, aside from injury history, like he's got like a 7'4" wingspan. He's tall. He seems to be athletic. I just don't know that he's comfortable around the basket. yet, which kind of makes sense. And maybe he's a guy, I don't know, like if he ends up being Noah Vonleh but picked in the 20s, is that really that bad? You know, Noah Vonleh's kind of he's been better since they acquired Nurkic, but Noah Vonleh has been a guy who's just kind of disappointing. Like he hasn't been a stretch four like a lot of us thought he would be. He isn't a guy who's all that competent around the rim in terms of offensively, but you at least see that, you know, he can have these stretches of being an effective big man on the boards and protecting the rim. I think Giles can be better than that. And maybe that's not a high bar to clear, but if you can see him get that comfort, then I think you see a lot of what everyone loved about him in high school.
Yeah. I don't know if the Thunder would take a risk on a guy like that. But if he can be the player that they thought he was in high school, I think that the Thunder would be a great place for him to land. Do you think that Tyler Lydon or Lydon, I don't know how to say it, is he a four? Because the Thunder need more options at the three, but do you think that he's a four in the NBA?
I think he has to be. Yeah. You know, he has to be a stretch four type of guy, and he looks like a shooter to me. Mm-hmm. Like he looks like he can play, but you know, I don't trust Syracuse guys being ready to play in the NBA. Like I just don't. And there's probably a bias in there that I haven't quite, you know, come to terms with, but for whatever reason, like, I don't think what they do at Syracuse allows guys to be ready for the NBA. So I think there's a steeper learning curve and it's just harder to overcome. But if he's able to, you know, be a 37 or above 3-point shooter, then that's probably enough. That's probably good enough as a player off the bench.
Mm-hmm. The guy that I was really hoping would stay in the 20s and he seems to be rising up draft boards is OG Anunoby. He just feels like a Thunder player to me, and a guy that should end up on OKC as just like this raw prospect that can defend, and maybe he could be a better Robertson or a more adequate offensive player than Robertson.
Yeah, and I don't think anyone's going to be scared by the injury, right? Like, I think everyone, going into this year, everyone thought, like, this guy can play. Mm-hmm. And I don't think, I mean, unless the medical stuff is just a disaster when he gets physicals for pre-draft stuff, I can't imagine him going in the 20s.
Yeah, and, like, the wings that are after him, you're just like, eh. Like, I just,
yeah, there's just not, there's not a lot there. I mean, I don't know. Maybe you think Ivan Robb can play, you know, some small forward and switch between the forward positions at the NBA level. But mm-hmm. after that, like, there's just, yeah, I mean, I guess there's Tyler Lydon and, I don't know, maybe, who's the guy from SMU, Ojale.
Yeah. Ojale.
I mean, he could be solid, but yeah. he seems kind of small.
Yeah. I don't know. What do you think about Dwayne Bacon? I watched him play. I think that he's okay. I think he could play in the NBA. But he's like way down on draft boards.
Yeah, I like him as like a guy in transition, but he's another one of those guys where it's just like, man, I wish that guy was a little taller.
Yeah.
Like if he was 6'7" with that, you know, with the wingspan proportion and everything, then he could make up for the fact that he doesn't seem like he can shoot. I know. And that ends up being the difference, right? It's like, can you just even be a mild threat from the 3-point line at the NBA level? And I don't think he can. Or I mean, not that I don't think he can. He's not right now.
Yeah.
And so that, you know, you really have to trust your shot development as an organization to get a guy comfortable with the extra difference or the extra distance in, you know, college to NBA 3-point line. And not only that, but the comfort within. Once you become that threat, you know, pump faking and attacking that hard close out off the dribble, he just seems so shaky in that respect.
Mm-hmm. I also just really like his name. That's basically why great I'm asking name. You that. And,
yeah, it's a fantastic name.
I need a Thunder Bacon jersey to wear to games. Zach, thanks for coming on the podcast today. We can follow you on Twitter at Talk Hoops. We can also read your stuff at FanRag, and you're on the True Hoop Pod a lot, so listen to the True Hoop Pod. Anything else that we should be looking out for?
No, that's it. FanRag Sports at Talk Hoops, and usually Wednesdays and Fridays on the True Hoop TV podcast.
Awesome. Thanks for coming on, Zach, and we'll talk to you later.
Absolutely. Thank you.